This week's Crossman Conversation is brought to you by Meeks Capital, Frontier Partners, First Horizon Bank, and Crossman Career Builders.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
The Crossman Conversation is hosted by John Crossman. John's heart is to see our community of leaders unite around what we have in common. John will be joined by political leaders, religious leaders, as well as activists making a difference in our nation. Here is your host for the Crossman Conversation, John Crossman.
Hello, this is John Crossman, and welcome to the Crossman Conversation. Now, Mike, real quick. Okay, I got a quick story before we get started.
All right, another one.
This is just a quick story. Okay, so listen. I was doing an interview the other day. A guy was interviewing me, and he said to me, John, what's the most important quality in leadership today that leaders are missing?
Wow, that's a great question.
Great question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's great a great
question.
One.
And so I immediately had in my head, I know a guy who is the epitome in his leadership of what most leaders are missing, okay? And then I was trying to think, how do I articulate this? And I'm like, it's this. It's the ability to not be into tribalism. It's the ability to like have your beliefs and have your system, but also be able to like call out something in your own group and also ability to connect to another group. And I was like, man, like it's so rare. It's so hard to find. But guess what? That guy? That's our guest.
All right.
Bishop Derek McCray. Thank you for being on the show.
Man, thank you so much, John, for having me.
I am so glad to have you. So great to see you. And I, you know, when I think about you, that's the unique leadership thing about you. You're serving your community. You're connected. And yet you have this mind that's not, you're not tagged into, I have to be this or have to be that. It's very broad and you're able to have discernment and connect to people. Are you tracking what I'm saying?
I am. I'm definitely tracking what you're saying.
So can you talk about that? I feel like I'm not articulating it well, but I feel like you live it. So can you talk about that as a leader, your ability to go broad and connect? What's that? Where's that come from?
Well, I think it comes from me being such a great student for many years. I had a chance to learn from a lot of different people, and I was blessed to learn from different type of individuals. And one of the common factors I saw so much in leadership was that you have a lot of different leaders who only want to specialize in their own giftings. They did not want to expand or also partner to make what they're working to do even larger. So now you have a lot of great leaders who have also endings. They don't actually have continuations. I wanted to make sure that I was a leader that is broad and able to help multiple people, different places, because I didn't want to be prejudiced to any type of population that I served.
Okay. My mind's kind of blown here. I gotta, well, first off, let me back it up. Like, let's talk about your education. Did you go to college, and what college would that be? I don't know.
Well, there's only one school, I think, in the nation. It's called Florida A&M University. It's from the highest of seven hills in Tallahassee, Florida. So I thank you for all the work that you do as well for Florida A&M.
I love FAMU. You know that. And, I'm honored. You know, I always say this, and I mean it. People thank me, and my response was, I'm so honored to serve. And you've heard me say this. You know, I've lectured over 30 universities, all universities kind of the same, lots of good kids, and then there's a gap, and then there's FAMU. Mm-hmm. I have never had a better experience. And I kid you not, Bishop, I was talking to a friend of mine in Dallas, Texas the other day, and he said to me, he goes, man, every FAMU kid I meet is exceptional. He's wow. Like, I don't know about all these other schools. He goes, but that school, you know.
We aim high, man. We're on the highest of the seven hills.
Yes. And so that's a very special place. A lot of great young people there. A lot of great families connected to there. And so when you went there, that must have been a big deal because it was great academically. But on top of that, the other people that you met got connected to.
You know, actually, FAMU, it's amazing that you say this, is because that's the location that identified my leadership qualities.
Go ahead.
It was on the hill at FAMU. I became the president of the gospel choir.
No way.
And when I became the president of the gospel choir, we had just recorded a national album that even went up for Stella Awards. And it was there that I began to learn, hey, it's much larger, because I was a drummer, but I began to become the business manager. And then I began to become the president of the choir. And I learned in every place of my leadership, it was all about my connections. Leadership is not about what you can do. It's about who you can connect with. The hardest role of leadership is identifying the right people to walk alongside. And that's the failure. This morning, I just made a post And the post that I made on social media was I was at the car wash and I saw this duck. This duck had all these ducklings. And what was amazing is I remember seeing the ducks when they were first birthed. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing them when they were just little chicklets and kind of trying to grow. But now they've kind of got to a little age. And I'm seeing now that mom was following the group versus leading the group.
Wow.
And it's amazing because most leaders want to stay in front, but you never want to actually partner with somebody else to say, let me see what you can do as well. And let me support. Effective leadership is not always being the leader. It's knowing where you fit in for the project to be accomplished.
So would you say empowerment?
It is.
So I said to my daughters, you know, when they were a little bit younger, they're 17 and 19 now, but a little bit younger, I told them, I said, you know, right now I tell you what to do, but someday you'll be 30 and you'll have your own car you paid for. And I might say, hey, can I borrow your car? And you could look at me and say, no, because mm-hmm. it's your car. Mm-hmm. I said, but then there'll be someday I'm going to look at you and go, gosh, should I get this surgery? And you'll say, Dad, you got to get this surgery and you'll be in charge. Mm-hmm. And I've done that intentionally because I want them to see themselves like in power, in leadership, like not now, but know that there's a vision and the roles change, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Definitely so. The roles change. And, you know, it's through our collaborations and also through our comfort of, and that's what a lot of leaders are. A lot of leaders are very intimidated. They're intimidated by other leaders. I love to use the model of Michael Jordan came into the league playing for the Chicago Bulls, hitting 60, 65 points a game. It was very attractive, but there was no championships. But then you see teams like the Golden State Warriors a few years ago who had Kevin Durant, they had Steph Curry, they had Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. They're winning championships, all with individual players who could be stars on other teams. And many leaders in today's society are not interested in championships as much as they are interested in MVP contests.
Boy, that's so true.
And we have to make sure that we are mindful that it's a bigger goal. Nobody really remembers the MVPs, but everybody remembers the champions.
I'm so glad you said that. It's funny because you and I are close to the same age. You look so much better. I don't know how that worked out. But I remember when Jordan was the guy that was scoring 63 points in a playoff game and lost.
Right.
And I just remember being like, gosh, he's so good. But the Bulls were terrible. They never were going anywhere. That is such a true. I mean, people today would know that, but that was such a true thing, right?
And what the leader had to do was he had to learn to take a step back and invest mm-hmm. in others.
Right.
And with this, other individuals became confident in their giftings. And now we see the Scottie Pippins. Now we see the Steve Kerrs. Now we see the Jim Paxsons, the John Paxsons, because of the fact that there was a step back. And that says a lot about the leader. Step back. Let's not be so determined to be right or to be shined upon. It's not about the shine. It's about the project. We are called to lead something, not called to shine for someone. We're called to lead something. It's about the end results and the effects of how we got to where we get to. That's effective leadership.
That's awesome. Let me say this. You said something to me the other day. You and I were having lunch and it changed me. Like it was one of those like, oh, really? And you and I were talking and I quoted a guy since deceased, but a pastor friend of mine. And he would say to me like, you know, John, all pastors are trying to get everybody into heaven. And in the context of our conversation, we're talking about Bethune-Cookman University. You know, I love Bethune-Cookman.
Yes,
I love FAMU too.
I love Bethune-Cookman too.
So I'm a big BCU guy, but I was saying, I was sort of in some pain because how much I love BCU and I was frustrated. And you said to me, no, John, not all pastors are trying to get everybody into heaven. Not everybody's really trying to help Bethune-Cookman or FAM or any of these other places we love to serve. Some people, these were your words, paraphrasing, because you talk good. You're a better speaker than me. But you said they're trying to build their kingdom on earth. Mm-hmm. And it really rocked me because in a good way because it was helping reset my expectation. But then I had a lot of self-reflection like, ooh, am I trying to build my kingdom on earth? And I was like, I need to loosen up. I want to make sure that I'm staying loose and backing off and walking away from things. You know, my roles at both FAM and Bethune-Cookman, I really have no interest in being the guy on mm-hmm. any of those boards. Mm-hmm. I really like being a member of that team. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy that. And I just want to be part of the team and help in my role. And I want to try to elevate other people to key roles.
And that goes back to heart, John. Mm-hmm. That goes back to heart. And sometimes we can get in our head. But this is about heart. Your desire for it to go forward sometimes requires you to be a person who is to shine. But it's all about, what is the heart intent? Why do I do what I do? Mm-hmm. What's the purpose behind what I do? What satisfies me? The most satisfaction to me as a pastor is not increase income. What satisfies me the most is seeing my parishioners succeed. I am happier seeing them succeed. I'm happier seeing doors open for them. I'm happier seeing them satisfied in their family units than I am in anything that brings me personal growth. Now, as a result of me seeing their happiness, growth comes my direction. And leaders have to be always focused on the extended versus on the personal intended. We have to always be focused on the extended, looking out to see, am I effective? You know, when I look at even biblical leaders, you see that they were effective because they had a goal to get the people to places, even sometimes at their own personal persecutions.
Yeah.
That's leadership.
That is. We're going to take a break in just a second, but I want to say one thing to you. I grew up, again, 80s kid, and so all of the athletes I admired were black men. You know, it was the Michael Jordan, Carl Lewis, Mike Tyson era. All pretty darn good, by the way.
All great.
yeah. On top of that, you know, my dad, you know, all the civil rights he did. And so black pastors is who I admired. And so as an adult, I always loved pastors, but I particularly love black pastors, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's some black leadership. You know, look, I'm a white conservative Republican dude. And so it's heartbreaking sometimes when I see somebody I really admire, but they don't necessarily feel the same way back. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell this friend, so this guy has me on his podcast and he brings me in and he says, hey, congregation, here's a white conservative Republican guy that loves us and wants to help. And I mean, I can't tell you the oxygen that mm-hmm. gave my heart. And mm-hmm. I thank you for that. But think about him doing that, mm-hmm. right? Because that was risky, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody might've been like, no way, or had a problem with that. But you took a chance on me, and I just thank you for that.
And that comes from a place of not having insecurities.
That's true.
It's all about being secure, and we have to get out of this. Sometimes we're making judgment and statements based upon teachings from the previous, and we got to get out of that spirit.
Yeah, things do change. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. This is John Crossman, The Crossman Conversation with which is one of my favorite people, mentors, Bishop Derek McCray.
It's said that it's not how much money you make, it's how much you keep and use to plan for your future. Nathan Meeks, principal at Meeks Capital, combines leading investment techniques with modern financial planning software to be the resource you turn to for clear, objective, and sound financial advice. For a no-obligation consultation, call Nathan at 407-494-5439 or visit meekscapital.com.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Are you willing to serve communities in crisis around the world? To people who are impoverished, oppressed, and persecuted? Frontier Partners International offers mission opportunities in areas least served to meet the needs of the helpless, the hapless, and hopeless. To learn how you can be a partner of this frontline ministry with your time, talent, or treasure, visit frontier-partners.org. That's frontier-partners.org.
Here's a call to those who want to make an impact on their company, their community, or who possess a desire to make the world a better place. Crossman Career Builders provides the tools and resources for you or your company to make a difference on some of the toughest issues that we all face. Crossman Career Builders partners with CEOs, politicians, and pastors seeking to address problems of racism, mental health, addiction, justice, and suicide. CrossmanCB.com.
Once again, here is John Crossman.
We're back. This is John Crossman with a Crossman Conversation with Bishop Derek McCray. Played a little drums, have you, in your life?
Yes, man. I played a lot of drums in my life, professionally for 7 years.
That's the real deal, my man.
Yeah, I miss it too.
I listen. you're cool. My wife and I have this argument. She thinks marching bands are cool. And I'm like, no, they're not cool. You can't play the piccolo and tell him you're cool. I'm like, but the drum line's cool. So we have, that's a constant debate.
You're just making problems for yourself.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, Mike's a guitarist. And like, you know what instrument I can play is that shaker thing? I can do that.
Gotcha.
I can do that. If you need me to go in and just do a little bit of that. Uh-huh. But that's very cool. That's very cool, the drum line. And that's awesome. And so you sing?
No, not at all. I try. But it's absolutely horrible.
Really?
My church is like, oh my gosh, but they take it. You know, they embrace it, but I know it's not good.
You know, it's funny. I never sang and danced my whole life until I had kids. Mm. And boy, that kind of breaks you because you do all kinds of things to get them to calm down. Mm-hmm. And now I'll moonwalk anywhere you want me to now.
I have to see that one.
It's really awful. I'm the pity of dad dancing. So I want to hear now, your worldview, there's different kinds of views about mm-hmm. church and how the people look at church. And you know, you could just have a view of like, this is my congregation and these 50, 60 people come in and we do our thing, right? And you seem to have, it's a lot bigger than that, but you have that. But then you also really seem to see the community in like the geography and the streets around your actual physical church. But you also seem to have a broader, is that the Judea, Jerusalem, that kind of?
Samaria and uttermost parts of the
earth. Yeah, mm-hmm. I knew you knew what I was talking about mm-hmm. when I don't know what I'm talking about.
I got you.
So can you just talk about what you're doing in the community, why you do it, and how does it all connect?
Yeah, I think first of all, the church is much more than just a place to gather for worship. I think that churches are also designed to be community change agents. And so when we have churches and people and parishioners who come from the local streets to the church, there should be an outreach component. There should be an empowerment component. There should be an education component as well, all going into making sure that we're leaving a positive imprint on the lives of those who worship there and those who walk past there. And so one of the things that I was real big on when we started with the Experience Christian Center was, what is going to be our theme? Our theme can't be come to church on Sunday. That's boring. It was going to play out real quick. Our theme became we're bigger than a Sunday, which means we want to impact the entire total man. So that's from education, where we do scholarships. That's down to voting, where we're helping to empower people to understand that you have a voice as well, and on social issues and things that are happening in our communities. That's from the standpoint of mentorship. Who are you looking at and who's standing on your shoulders later? In the Black community also, I really want to make sure that I was empowering our people to understand legacy building as it relates to that as well, where when you pass, make sure your kids are doing better than you were, that they have a different opportunity than what you had in the past. And then, of course, we still have the worship. We still have business development. I'm real big into really how is the economy looking for our communities. Mm. And then also serving the common needs of the common household. Are the individuals here hungry? Are we feeding them? Are we giving them clothes? You know, Jesus gave a real clear model for us how to be the church. And he did not give the model to be the church by being the worship facility. The model for being the church was visiting me when I was sick, clothing me when I was naked, feeding me when I was hungry. And we try to do all those things. And so outreach is the driving force behind the Experience Christian Center and my efforts.
Years ago, my wife, for our anniversary, she took me to Big Sur, Pebble Beach, part of California. And being a Florida boy, it was like being on Mars, you know, just the cliffs and the ocean, all kind of stuff. And so my wife decided when we were on this trip, she wanted to go see a mission. And I didn't have any interest in that. I don't know. I just didn't have a Catholic church mission thing on my head. So we did it. You know, she wanted to do it. We did it. And it blew my mind because, you know, we're looking at this church that was created by a Catholic missionary who had come from, you know, Spain off an island. And of course, you know, there was no Panama Canal. Like, how did they get over to California? But I was looking at a photo of the church from like the 1800s. And I was thinking to myself, imagine this huge structure being built in the 1500s and the Native Americans that were there. It was the most solid structure. If there was heavy rain or, you know, whatever, like what that building must have been as a beacon of safety, right? If you saw it, like, you know, there you go. But what is it now? And what it now is, it's a museum, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So the building must, the physical building must have been so relevant for hundreds of years. And now it's irrelevant,
yeah.
right? It's not, right? And so when you're talking, it's like, that's what you feel like to me. It's like, you're the beacon in that community, right, around you and all the different things you mentioned. But you're also a beacon to me. You're a beacon to me. Like, and your church is a beacon to me because of what you're doing. And then there's this connection point on top of that. So you seem to get all around, but then you're created the greater connectivity, right?
I like that. I like something you said just now too, John, when you're talking about that church, because that's a real factor right now, even in our communities. Mm-hmm. So we're finding that, you know, after the pandemic and everything, a lot of people are struggling with going back to church. And a lot of people are struggling to see church attendance come back because they stopped. Mm-hmm. So they stopped during the pandemic, or other places, they also did not keep evolving after the pandemic. Mm-hmm. COVID has shifted a lot of things. When you see massive facilities, it tells you that at one point in time it was necessary. So when you see that it's no longer necessary, it means someone did not continue to evolve the vision. And too many leaders are in tradition. And I love tradition. But the truth of tradition is, and here's my definition, tradition is frozen success. It's something good that worked, something that's not working anymore. And we're not willing to engage what's coming because we're so stuck on what we've done. Mm-hmm. And leaders have to be always interested in what is next. So when we think about the community, the needs of the community will always shift. They will always evolve. Right now we're doing gas giveaways, right? So that's one of the fundraisers outreach events we do is gas giveaways. Well, in another 5 years, gas giveaways will not be effective in the church because a lot of people are going to electric cars.
Right.
So we have to be figuring out what is the next move. And true leadership is not that you just know a place. You're always discovering a need. True leadership means I'm studying. I'm putting myself in different circles to expand my understanding, to expand my scope of it, so that I can always be effective, because leadership is a tool, but leadership is not the end. You have to keep investing in this. That tool is not enough. You have to keep investing. You have to keep evolving. You have to keep growing. You have to keep expanding and keep exposing yourself. So you go out and be a sacrificial lamb to learn stuff. And you do this all the time, John. You go out and learn stuff so you can come back and bring people along the way.
Right.
That's what effective leadership is. And not a lot of people want to put in the prior investment. They just want the results of the end. But effective leadership means I go before, I discover, I walk back and tell you how we can walk the road together.
It's so funny. I've been a runner my whole life. I go right now and run 13 miles.
Bless you.
Yeah. You know, like it's
I could drive 13 miles. Right now.
It's in me, but it's really not good for me anymore. Right. Mm. So I want to talk about this. We're going to wrap up here in just a few minutes. But if I filled, you know, this studio, we had bigger walls, and I had 60 white CEOs in this room, mm-hmm. and they're good dudes. They're good guys. These are guys that are like, man, I want to help. And I hear Derek, he sounds so smart. But how do I help? Or why should I care? Or what message would you want to send? What would you want them to know?
The first thing I want them to know is that, we appreciate them. We're all on the same team. And, even though we may be at different levels, same team, there is a need for them, but there's also a jewel in the community. And when we come together, now we make this place the better opportunities that we all desire. There are some great individuals who just have not had that leg up yet, have not been exposed to that next level yet, but they are extremely gifted, extremely qualified, and everybody doesn't want to hand out. Some people just want partnership, true partnership, because I believe that even those CEOs will discover benefits as they partner with the community.
You know, Bishop, I'm dyslexic, among other things, and I say to people like yourself, I couldn't do what you do. And sometimes when I say that, people meet like, oh, yeah, you could, you know, and I'm always like, no, I'm not trying to insult myself. Like, we all have different brains, right? And there's things I can do. I have a set of skill set, but there's things I can't do. My wife's got some medical issues that she deals with, and two of her doctors are Black women, and they're exceptional, and they're so smart. They're so freaking smart. Their degree, I couldn't pass at least all the classes they've taken, right? I'm honoring them, not disrespecting myself. But my point is that when I look in so many communities, there's a brain in there. Mm-hmm. That could become an astronaut. I can't. They become an engineer and I can't. They could become a doctor and I can't, right? We need to make sure all those brains and minds have the opportunities, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I also say this. We share the same blood, don't we?
We do.
Right?
We do.
And we share the same blood. And if we do, that makes us brothers. And we need to care about our brothers. We need to care about our community, care about our neighborhood. And so having that thought process and seeing us ourselves in that context, that doesn't mean ignore the problems that we have, our own right. things, but he was seeing it as in a family. So
I would say, let's not let our histories separate our futures.
Amen to that.
Our histories be what they were. Sometimes history is just to bring light and acknowledgement to a better future that we can have together. And there is a common ground that we can walk forward that could be very profitable and prosperous for all of us together.
I believe, why do I support HBCUs, FAMU, Pathuthuk, and Jackson State, all the schools so much? Because I believe the greatness our country needs to yield is going to come out of an HBCU.
I believe it too.
That's what I believe. I'm not saying that's prophetic.
And you've said that to me before.
Yeah, that's what I believe. Well, anyway, Bishop Derek McCray, you're so cool. Thanks for being here.
Thank you,
Van. I'm so impressed. You're doing so many great things, and I hope you'll stay in touch. Let us know what we can do to help you. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, this is John Crossman, The Crossman Conversation. And as always, support your local HBCU.
This has been Crossman Conversation, produced by a Crossman Career Builders Mark Radio Production.